This is Blackness in the Workplace, the podcast. We are on a mission to center, promote, build, and support the experiences and needs of Black professionals, both inside and outside the workplace, through collaboration, conversations, and activism. Our voices matter. Our lives matter. Our experiences matter. I'm your host and founder of Blackness in the Workplace, Jessica, and let's get this show started. Elizabeth Guglietti is a transactional lawyer, diversity, equity, and inclusion parishioner with a large Fortune 500 company. She is incredibly passionate about helping Black women learn how to negotiate in every corner of their lives and flex their courage muscles. Through her company, We Resolve to Win, she has helped women in corporate jobs increase their salaries from $2,000 to $30,000, gain sponsors, new titles, and enhanced responsibilities. As someone passionate about conflict resolution, she is dedicated to helping Black women communicate for effectiveness to bust the myth of the angry Black woman. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so happy to be here with you. I'm happy to talk about this subject. Mm-hmm. I love the title of your podcast, Blackness in the Workplace, because we have such a unique experience in the workplace. And I am just so elated that we can really get into the meat of this conversation.
Yes, me too. This is definitely something that we need to talk about here. So before we jump into, you know, talking about salary negotiation and securing the bag and, you know, getting the money that we deserve, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about yourself. You have a very impressive background. So, you know, how did you get into being a lawyer? And then what was your transition into going into this space where you're advocating for Black women?
Sure. So my desire to become a lawyer started when I was 10 years old. I was in a play in fifth grade and I played a lawyer, and there was a quote unquote defendant by the name of Benjamin Drunk. So he was Ben Drunk. And I put him away in that play. And after that, everyone was just like, oh my God, you were such an excellent lawyer. This was so great. And at 10 years old, you really don't know much. I probably was more like nine, but at 10 years old, I was like, this is it. I found my career. I found my calling. I am going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a prosecutor. I am going to be someone, when I grow up, I'm going to be in the courts and put away the bad guys. And it literally stuck at 10 years old. It literally stuck.
You knew yourself already at 10. That's beautiful.
Well, you know, it's so funny. A part of me is just like, I knew myself. And a part of me is like, did I really let a 10-year-old plan my whole entire life?
Yeah.
So, after that, I just was determined that I'm going to be a lawyer. And, you know, went through high school, went to Florida State University for undergrad, went to Stetson University, had a dual degree, Juris Doctorate, and an MBA. And then I went into employment litigation. And after going through employment litigation and representing individuals against very large, well-known branded organizations, I realized that there are so many opportunities for an organization to get it correct. There are many opportunities for an organization to treat people well. And so for me, instead of just going after the organization and helping people bring these multi-million dollar lawsuits against organizations, I realized that a lot of organizations need help and a lot of people need to know how to manage themselves accordingly in organizations as well. People don't often have the information to be successful. People don't know how to navigate. Sometimes there are communication issues. Sometimes there are cultural differences. Sometimes people don't get paid appropriately because they have not negotiated their salary. And so I transitioned from doing employment litigation and contract work to being in-house with a very large organization, as you talked about. And in me being in-house, my natural gravitation is to help people and to advocate for people. So I automatically, within the first few months of me being there, I've been with the organization now for, this will be my eighth year, I immediately started working on diversity, equity, inclusion, because I know what it's like to be in an organization and also be a part of a marginalized community. So it's very important work.
Yeah, definitely. You know, everything that you're saying is something is are things that I see and things I've personally dealt with myself. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, a lot of us, a lot of Black people, when we go into these corporate jobs or just jobs in general, you know, especially in the corporate space, we're oftentimes the first people to do it. We don't really have the resources that our, a lot of times our white coworkers might have. So you're going in and you don't know that, hey, I should be getting paid a lot more than this, because in your mind, you're thinking, okay, this is a great offer. You're not understanding, you know, what is in that offer, and that you have the authority and the power to ask for more money. And as somebody exactly. who works in human resources, you know, and doing recruiting, I always tell people with candidates, you have every right to ask questions about the pay and the benefits. You have right to push back and say, hey, look, I'm not looking for this. I'm looking for that. But in your opinion, and even with your own personal experience, you know, again, I see a lot of women, whether they're Black, white, but especially Black women, who don't negotiate pay, don't know how, and are afraid to. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that's such a problem for women to ask for what they're worth?
That, you know, it's so plaguing to me, because one of the things I notice, and we have the data to back this up, one of the things I notice is that women are not negotiating their salaries. Men negotiate at a 57% rate. Mm-hmm. Women negotiate at a 7% rate. That information is not necessarily from a fully cross-racial group. Mm-hmm. So I imagine if we look at the numbers related to Black individuals, that those numbers, those percentages are significantly less. And I think when it comes to women, women are fearful because we are naturally community focused, community oriented. Many women struggle with wanting to be liked. Many women want people to see them and appreciate them. They don't want to, quote unquote, cause problems and cause troubles. And I think because of that, and because of how society has told women how to act, you know, be ladylike, color within the lines, be kind, be gracious. I firmly believe that you can be kind and gracious and negotiate your salary. And I think a lot of people generally don't negotiate their salaries, but women were afraid to actually speak up for ourselves because, one, we have not been taught to advocate for ourselves. Two, we don't see other women negotiating their salaries. And three, when people who are in a position of management and authority see other women negotiating their salaries, because it's so odd, they probably create blockades. Men and women create blockades for other individuals. So if you've attempted to negotiate your salary and you got shut down, in your mind, you begin to process, whenever I need to negotiate my salary, I'm going to get a no. Whenever I need to negotiate my salary, people are going to shut me down. Whenever I need to negotiate my salary, it is not going to go well. So instead of being able to just sit in that moment and say, you know what, it didn't go well this time, but I'm going to keep going. I'm going to be resilient. I'm going to empower myself. I'm going to encourage myself. The opposite happens. It doesn't go well the first time and we cut it loose. It's not meant to be. I'm not going to ask anymore. I feel thoroughly embarrassed. I was told no. I can't even walk into this hallway with my head held high. I have to walk in shame. And that is just not the case. So what I encourage women to do is to really understand, why is it that you want to negotiate your salary? Are you attempting to negotiate your salary because you want to build wealth? Hopefully the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Are you attempting to negotiate your salary because you acknowledge and recognize that pay equity is very important and you should be paid for the work that you do, equal pay for equal work? The answer should be yes. There are things that we have to ask ourselves related to us negotiating our salaries, and women often don't think about it. They don't analyze, why is it that they want to negotiate their salary? Instead, what ends up happening is that they think about, either I'm going to embarrass myself, the situation's not going to go well, or it didn't go well back in the day, and they completely stop themselves before they even have a plan. They don't strategize. They don't really think about, what are some ways that I can negotiate? And they don't take the time to do the research necessary. So it's a very complex and convoluted situation when you think about, why is it that women are not negotiating? Because we have not seen it done successfully, perhaps in our family. We don't have good examples of it. We don't have good experiences of it. We have not managed our emotions, and emotional intelligence is very important when you're negotiating. We have not managed our emotions that are involved with negotiating. So rather than dealing with all of that, we rather just go in the opposite direction and stay in a place of peace, not knowing that you not speaking up, you not asking, you not getting clarifying information, you not doing the research, et cetera, you are doing the opposite. You are allowing yourself to be in a place of great discomfort and a place where you won't be peaceful when you discover that somebody who either came behind you or somebody of a different race or et cetera, is getting paid more for the work that you are doing as well. So yeah. I think it's a very complex thing, and we really got to delve into it so we can fix this, because Black women, the data shows us Black women receive 62 cents, and I'm rounding up. It's actually like 61.3, but mm-hmm. I'm rounding up 62 cents for every dollar that a white man receives. And so if that is the case, knowing that we are incredibly educated, knowing that we have degrees and certificates and experiences and all of these things and wonderful aspects of our experiences that we can bring to an organization, knowing that is the case, then the onus is on us, and we got to do what we need to do to make sure that we are negotiating and we're flexing our courage muscle in the workplace.
Yeah. I mean, all those points are great. I mean, I know from my experience with salary negotiation, there's this fear of, okay, I can push too hard and it may impact my job. It may impact right. my ability to get promotions. I may lose my job. I know in the job offer stage, there have been candidates who have been afraid to ask for more money because they're afraid that they will take them out of the
right that the job offer is going to get pulled.
Yeah, get pulled. Yep. And now I always say that every job has a budget, and there are some jobs where there are a lot of room. Like, people don't understand a lot of these jobs, there's so much room to negotiate. Not all jobs.
So much room, but
there are a lot of room to negotiate. And if you have the right skills and you are presenting yourself and you're showing that you are a valuable employee or candidate, what have you, you will see that people are willing to negotiate with you. So what would you... Maybe there's another question in here that we need to answer first. But when someone is coming to you, if I'm coming to you and you're my manager, and I say, Elizabeth, I want a raise, a $10,000 raise, and you tell me no, what are managers looking for you to present to them to justify getting that raise?
Yeah. So what I always tell people is that they need quality research. Mm-hmm. You need to research, you need to have good information, because if I'm your manager and you come to me and you say, hey, Elizabeth, I'm looking to negotiate my salary and I want to increase my salary by $10,000. My first question is, where did you get that information from? The reason why I would ask that question is because as a lawyer, I've been trained to build a case. I am a fact-based person. And it's so interesting. I was just listening earlier today to a speech that Les Brown did a very long time ago, and he said, do what you know, not what you feel. Mm-hmm. And if you have good information in front of you and you are able to present a case, you are going to be much more successful in comparison to someone who simply wants to get a $10,000 raise just because, they have fallen on hard times. And we have to also understand that organizations are focused on value, and they're also focused on their bottom line. Yes. So if you're able to prove your value, and if you're mm-hmm. able to prove how you support the bottom line, and if you're able to back up the content and the information that you have in front of you with quality, sound research, you are going to be more successful. So the first thing I always tell people to do is, as I mentioned earlier, why is it that you want more money? Do you want more money because the other person, you discovered that somebody's getting paid a little bit more for the same job? Do you want more money because you're trying to buy a new car? Do you want more money because you want to invest more money? Whatever that reason is, that is your business. This is not my place to judge. As a coach, as a negotiation coach, I never judge a person's reason for wanting to negotiate their salary. But what I do is scrutinize and ask additional questions related mm-hmm. to, where did you get that information from? I'll give you an example. About 3 years ago, I assisted someone who is based in Chicago, and she said, I would like, she actually was going into an HR position, oddly enough, but she was like, I would like to get bumped from $50,000, from the offering of $50,000 to a higher offering of about $80,000. My question is, why do you think that the company would bump you from $50,000 to $80,000? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a big bump, right? So I said, why would you think the company would bump you from $50,000 to $80,000? 80. And she was like, well, you know, I got a lot of information as far as what I can bring. I know that I can do a wonderful job. And, you know, hopefully I can become a manager. And then I secondarily asked, where did you get that information from? What I notice is that when women are negotiating, they are often negotiating with emotion. Yes. My thing is, yes, if you want to bring emotion into the room, I'm not going to stop you and I'm not going to judge you. But what you also need to do, going back to our other point, is negotiate with what you know, not how you feel. So mm-hmm. even if you are shaking like a leaf, you can still effectively negotiate. But what you need is quality research. Now, if you are in a particular industry, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're an accountant, if you are in HR, every single industry has a particular database of information specifically related to your industry. So for example, mm-hmm. if you are a paralegal or a lawyer, so I'm a lawyer, I was able to increase my salary from $50,000 to $100,000. And I was able to do that in a 12-month span because one, I had research, and two, I was able to go to the database of information related to my industry. After doing that, I then compared it to the general information that's online. I went on LinkedIn, I went on Glassdoor, I went on salary.com, I went on PayScale. I was Googling, going 10 pages deep into mm-hmm. Googling. And I realized that whenever I coach women and I say, it is not my job to have the numbers in front of me. My job is to coach you, create scripts for you, and help you walk through the process of you being successful in your negotiation. Your job is to do the research. Now, I want you to do the research. When they come back to me and I say, how did the research go? What did you find? They said, well, you know, this is what I found. Here are the numbers. And then I said, okay, well, let's compare the numbers. And then I always ask this question, how much time did you spend on your research? And yes. the answer is always about 20 minutes. No, ma'am. Nope. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. You cannot research for 20 minutes and build a case around a salary increase, especially if it's a bump of like $30,000, $40,000. Because guess what? If I'm on the opposite side of that table and I say, where did you get that research from? And you show me just a couple of printouts, I am not going to be persuaded. And I'm not going to create blockades, but I am not necessarily going to rubber stamp that approval for you to get that big bump. What I always encourage women to do, again, I keep harping on this point. I just did a Clubhouse on this yesterday. You have to do your research. And I'll give you another example. There was a gentleman that was in the Clubhouse room. We were talking about contract negotiations and salary negotiations. In that room, he said he was offered a position as an engineer. And once he was offered the position, they offered him about $80,000 as a, I can't remember exactly what type of engineer, a research-based engineer. Mm-hmm. I said, that's wonderful. Congratulations. He was excited. He accepted the offer. After hanging up the phone with the recruiter, then he went online and discovered that he should have been, the actual salary range was more around $97,000. To me, that makes sense because I have more familiarity with the engineering world because I have a number of family members that are engineers. So I said, okay. And so his question was he in a position to go back to the recruiter to say, hey, I know I accepted this position for $80,000, but I did quick research. And this quick research is telling me that I actually should be at $97,000, which again, addresses the point. If you don't do your research and if you don't do quality research and if you don't compare your numbers and if you're not spending more than 20 minutes doing research, you are putting yourself in a position of not having a successful salary negotiation. And that's the reason why I always tell people, make sure you do your research, make sure you are practicing with quality information, because why? Practice makes permanent. You are never going to be perfect, but you can get to a place of permanence when you begin to negotiate in every single corner of your life. So I'm going to go ahead and pause there.
No, that was all great information. I'm just, you know, to our listeners, again, you'll get me being a hiring manager working human resources. Like Elizabeth said, you can't just come to your manager and be like, I want $20,000. You have to be able to justify why you want that. Everyone has a budget. Companies are looking to be very cost effective. That includes, you know, payroll and paying folks. And if you are not bringing value, or if you cannot articulate the value you are bringing into the role, if you're not doing that research, and like she said, research isn't just a quick 5-minute Google search on Glassdoor, and then you coming back with a printout saying, oh, you know, I really, you know, you really need to be doing thorough research, and you need to be able to put that research together, practice it, and make sure that you, when they answer those questions, that you are prepared. Because again, you can have the research and you can be qualified, but if they start asking questions and you can't defend it and you don't know how to answer it, that's part of that preparation. It falls through.
That's so right.
Everything that she's saying is spot on. Now, when we talk about research, where are some sites that people can go and at least start with their research? Because I know Glassdoor is good, you know, salary.com, but I'm sure there's other places that people can look.
Yeah, there are so many. So the first thing that I always encourage people to do is to do a specific Google research. So I tell people to, in quotes, put in the position name, the position title. So for example, if you are an accountant or a senior accountant, you want to type in senior accountant, mm-hmm. and then you want to type in your geography. So I am primarily based in Orlando, Florida. So I would type in senior accountant in quotes and then Orlando, mm-hmm. Florida. What that does is that it provides you a narrowed search specific to Orlando, Florida. What begins to happen with many individuals that are very new to negotiations, mm-hmm. is through their nervousness or through them just trying to collect some information so they can say they have the information in front of them, they just do a quick search and they just type in their role. What an accountant gets paid in Atlanta versus, yes. Chicago, yes. versus geographically, we get paid differently. We have different markets, and you have to be able to speak to your market. So again, going back to making your case, going back to being very clear about the information that you have, it's so much better and it's so much stronger when you are in a position to say, I've done my research, and what, mm-hmm. I have discovered is that in Orlando, Florida, in Atlanta, Georgia, in Detroit, mm-hmm. that accountants should be receiving a salary range of X. In comparison to, and hear the difference, in comparison to, well, I did a search and I see that I'm supposed to get paid $97,000, right? You want to, mm-hmm. be persuasive. You want to make sure that you are very clear. And in order to be very persuasive, you got to make sure that you sound smart in your negotiation. So if I go to you and I say, you know, I'm really curious to just talk to you about this salary, because, you know, one thing I notice is that I've been with the company for a very long time, and being with the company, and you're just in your nervousness, you're just kind of rattling off. It's like, in comparison through to walking and talking and negotiating with strength, mm-hmm. I've done my research. I want an opportunity to sit down and talk with you. And then when you have that opportunity to sit down and talk with them, you can say, according to the market, you got to talk like companies, right? Companies, yep. are in industries. Public companies have annual reports. Public companies file a 10K, and that's a whole nother conversation for another, yeah. day. Mm-hmm. But there is so much research available, and that research, your research should absolutely include what you've. So that's the first thing I would do. I would do a specific search using quotes as it relates to your job title and geographically where you're located. That's the first thing. Secondly, I definitely would check out the sites that I've talked about. Those are free sites. A lot. What's great about Glassdoor is that there are people within the company that are already reporting in. The problem with Glassdoor is that it is not verifiable and it's, yes. not certifiable, right? Mm-hmm. So Glassdoor, at this point, as I understand it, they are not saying this information has been certified. They're not giving that information a blue check. So if I go in there and I say, hey, I'm a compliance specialist, I'm making $90,000, that's a full boldface lie. Because when I was a compliance specialist, I was only making 50. So if, yeah. I go in there and I start lying and somebody is researching it and they're using it exclusively to negotiate, they're putting themselves in a position of risk. So in order to mitigate that risk, to make things better, what I always say is make sure that you have minimally 3 to 5 resources so that you can compare the numbers between those 3 to 5 websites, mm-hmm, find, mm-hmm. the average of the number. This is exactly what I did to increase my salary from $50,000 to $100,000. I had the websites lined up. I said, according to Robert Half, which is a legal database, I said, according to Glassdoor, according to LinkedIn, according to PayScale, according to salary.com. Mm-hmm. And there was another website that's, Glassdoor purchased 2 years ago. I cannot recall the name, but there's another website, Glassdoor purchase. But now when you go, when you land on the Glassdoor website, I have those five. I said, according to these different websites, this is the information that I've received. And according to my market, for my years of experience, for my education, I should be receiving $136,000. I knew that number specifically because I was able to compare the numbers and I was able to find the average between those five websites. What that did is that it allowed me to, with strength and with authority, go into that meeting with my manager and say, I am clearly severely underpaid. So what are we going to do to make sure that we're on the same page, to make sure that you and I are content and happy, because it is evident that I bring great value to this organization. It's different when you have good information and you're negotiating with strong information in front of you. So I always encourage people, do your research. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, make sure that you're practicing, find a trusted friend, find a family member, and tell them to be hard on you. I told my husband, my sister, and my best friend, I was like, I'm negotiating with you. I want you to be hard on me. I want you to just difficult, be nasty. I want you to act like you woke up on the wrong side of bed and you just give me the worst. Give me your worst. And they gave me their worst. And it wasn't a one-time practice. It was a consistent thing. And then once I felt comfortable enough, then I was able to reach out to my manager and I said, I would like to talk to you about my current salary and my expectations moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's important. Yeah, I think it's important for people to realize that this does not happen in a day. It doesn't happen in a few days. This takes time.
Exactly.
And like you said, you got your money up to where it needed to be in 12 months. So, I mean, you want to make sure that you are giving time this. You like, don't listen to this episode and then get on Glassdoor and then try to make this happen. And then the next day, you talking about, well, you know, I listened to Blackness in the Workplace and this is what they said. And no. This takes time. Like, you know, she had to get her research. She had to, you know, make sure her research was right. She had to get her family lined up so that they could do mock meetings and making sure that she was practiced. That way, when she came in there, because you know they're going to grill you hard. I mean, they always, you know, they grill you hard. You're a Black woman. You're a woman. You ask for more money. They're going to grill you to death. So if you come in there, you start to fold because you only did like 2 days of
research. You did 2 days of research. Yeah. You barely practiced. You don't have your information lined up. You don't got no script in front of you. Yeah, that's right. I told myself, you are going to spend 30 days. I was like, Liz, you got 30 days. Okay. I said, you're going to spend 30 days of doing quality research. I did my 30 days. I did quality research. I searched and I was going, you know how people go into Google, they scroll all the way down to the bottom and it's like 1, 2, 3 and have all those. That is information. And most people only stop on page one. So I tell people, keep going. You should be on page 12, trying to figure out what you find. What are the blogs saying? What are people saying on the street? What are you hearing? And then after I was able to do that in 30 days, I practiced with my family and I practiced. And then I set time about 3 weeks with my manager, 3 weeks ahead, so that I could kind of prepare myself emotionally and say to myself, this is why I'm negotiating. This is why it's important. This is what it's going to look like. Get my mind right. Because I will tell you this, mindset is key. Mindset will allow you to walk into a negotiation and walk out successful. And even if you don't get every single thing that you want out of that particular negotiation, you're still able to say to yourself, you know what? I didn't get everything that I wanted, but I got way more in comparison to someone who would have kept their mouth closed because they were fearful or afraid that they were going to get a no outrightly.
Yeah. And I will say too, like, if you go in there and you waste the manager's time because you're not prepared and you're just saying stuff, that also can hurt your relationship. So I want people to know, like, if you are doing everything that Elizabeth said and you're coming in there correct, I wouldn't worry so much about the relationship being hurt. Because from my experience, managers love it when you're prepared. The more prepared you are, you're not wasting their time. Even again, if you don't get everything, chances are you're going to get more than what you asked for. But when you come in and you're wasting your time and you're not prepared, that is what's going to hurt your relationship. That's going to make it harder to negotiate in the future because they said, well, why should I bother with Elizabeth? Last time she had me in the meeting, she didn't even know what she had me in the meeting.
She didn't know what she was talking about. But how about this? Not only does it impact you individually, when the black woman behind you mm-hmm. starts a job and she tries to negotiate, they're going to be looking at her crazy as well. So yeah. I always tell people, you know, you should be negotiating, one, because it's good for you. It's great practice. When you learn mm-hmm. how to negotiate your salary, you learn how to negotiate in every single corner of your life. But mm-hmm. also, you should be negotiating for the people that are going to come into the organization behind you, so that when Stacy and Lisa and Karen and all these other individuals that are part of your community begin to negotiate, they're not looking at them as though they have like three heads, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you're negotiating, because it does impact you individually and it impacts your community. I knew that when I negotiated, and I went in hard, I was graceful, I was kind, but I was relentless. I was like, I'm going to be a dog on a bone with this. And I negotiated hard, and I was able to go from 50 to 70. And then by me doing my research, which is another thing that's very important, I recognized in that moment that my specific title, I was capped. I was capped at like 75. I was like, this is not going to work for me. Yeah. I will not just be capped at 75. I need to find a way to make a lateral move to another position under a new title and then continue to negotiate up. And that is what I did. So when you negotiate, a part of your strategy is figuring out, where are you capped? Are you capped in this particular role? Are you capped with this particular title? Do you need to change your title? What other things can you negotiate? I always tell people to focus on the three B's. You want to focus on your base salary. You want to focus on a bonus if your position qualifies for a bonus. And you also want to focus on the benefits that are associated with your particular role. And I am unafraid to ask questions. And the thing is that you'll always discover when someone is not comfortable dealing with someone like myself that's negotiating, because I'm not grilling the person. I'm not going in their face. But what I am saying is, I have a couple of questions. I want to let you know that my questions are not going to be quick. I'm hoping that you have some time. If I'm talking to a recruiter, I'm hoping that you have some time to specifically talk about this. Is it okay if we delve into it? And I have my questions drafted up. I don't go in unprepared. Preparation is key. Preparation will help you get your entire life and make sure that your edges don't get snatched. So when I have all my questions, I'm writing down answers. I'm comparing notes. I want to make sure that the information that they're feeding me is something that I'm comfortable with, because if I'm not comfortable, I'm not going to be able to continue to walk in peace. And you want, regardless of where you work, you want to be able to work with peace, knowing that you are not begrudgingly working, knowing that your coworker in the cubicle next to you is getting paid more and you're getting upset about it. And the question I always ask is, you know, yeah, you discovered that the person's getting paid more. Did you negotiate your salary? And and 9 times out of 10, it's like, well, I didn't negotiate my salary because I didn't know what to ask. I didn't negotiate my salary. I didn't know that I could, right? You can always negotiate your salary until they fully come and shut you down, until they say to you, hey, guess what? This is a non-negotiable. We are only going to pay you $70,000 for this role. Until you hear that or see that in writing, you can always negotiate. Again, going back to the three B's, you want to think about what is your base according to the market, comparing to your market. Yep. You want to think about your bonus. Some positions don't qualify for a bonus, and you should ask that. Does this position qualify for a bonus? And if the position does not qualify for a bonus, the follow-up question is, why not? Why is it that this position doesn't qualify for a bonus? And will this position qualify for a bonus in the future? You absolutely should be asking these questions. And then when you receive your benefits package, I need you to bust out with that highlighter and start highlighting and start asking questions in the margin, just so that you're prepared for that next conversation that you schedule to, again, delve. Negotiating a contract, negotiating your salary, negotiating your rent, negotiating with business partners, negotiating your debt. These things take time. I know we live in a microwave society. Everybody likes to do a hot pocket, pop it in, get it real quick, burn your mouth on the cheese. This is not that time. You need to be patient with yourself, and you need to acknowledge that, you know what, maybe I don't know everything under the sun, but I will be fully prepared when it's time for me to move forward in my conversation.
Yeah, definitely. When you're talking with a recruiter, especially if you're on the the candidate side of things, it's really important to understand that, yes, like Elizabeth said, you can talk about anything you want to talk about. You answer those questions. I said it before and I say it again, it's your career. You have to own it. And it's critical to answer those questions on the front end, because then you're not wasting your time. And I've had one person say to me, you know, she went into an in-person interview and she still didn't know the pay or the benefits. I'm like, why didn't you ask those questions?
Wait,
why
did so you? She went into the in-person interview.
Yes, she had
the recruiter, mm-hmm.
and she didn't know
what the pay was, so she didn't even know if it aligned. That's a part of making sure that the job is aligned, yes. Right?
And that's a red flag.
It's a huge red flag.
Real
I will tell
flag.
You this. I'm in the process of my career shifting. I'm doing a lot of shifting in my career. And I was recently recruited for a role in a state that I don't live in, that I'm not interested in moving in. But I was like, let me just have this conversation. So the recruiter reached out to me and he was like, well, you know, this is what the title is. And I was like, love the title. He's mm-hmm. like, this is the role. Love the role. This is how, you know, you're going to manage 3 people. Love that. This is what's expected. Yes, 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 yes. Let's talk about salary. Mm-hmm. And when he said to me, hey, the salary is paying a range of $60,000 to $111,000, I was like, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, that's not going to work. And I said, do you, as a recruiter, do you believe that there is a way for us to negotiate upwards towards $160,000? And he said, I don't think so. There is a promotion that's automatically built in. I said, I love that. And he's like, but I don't think so. And they're going to require that you relocate by June. Those two things did not align for me. One, I was not going to relocate until I know that this pandemic is gone. I was not going to agree to relocate. And two, I knew that them capping this role, and granted, it wasn't an education system, but them capping the role at $111,000 was not going to work for me. It did not align. I told him, thank you so much. It's not going to work. So to your point, whenever a recruiter reaches out to you, that's a conversation that needs to happen at Front Street. We need to know who we are dating. We need to know who we are dating, because if we are dating someone that we are not trying to spend a decent amount of time with, you have nothing in common with this person. Mm-hmm. This person's probably going to get on your nerves because they want to talk about Star Wars all the time and you have no desire to talk about Star Wars. You need to make sure that there is alignment. And I think a lot of people don't ensure that that is the case. And when you walk into an in-person interview and you're feeling good about it and they hit you with, hey, we're only paying you $5 an hour and a pack of bubble gum, then you're going to find yourself being like, okay, now I'm upset. And you can't be upset at them. You should be upset at yourself, because the onus is on you to bring it up. As Black women, we have to bring it up, because if we don't talk about it, we are showing that we are okay with it. So the first question should always be, can you tell me what the salary, what is the salary range for this role? And if they're not able to tell you that, you should tell them, here are what my salary expectations are.
Yes. Yes, definitely. I mean, it really is on you. And another thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, there's this movement, for lack of a better word, especially on LinkedIn, with some of the influencers, I'm using air quotes, of people who are saying, well, the pay should be in the job postings. The pay should be in the job postings. I agree, in the interest of transparency, that it saves everyone time when you're upfront with the pay. And I do side-eye recruiters and hiring managers who don't talk about pay. Like, I have told people, like, look, if we're not going to talk about pay, then I'm not interested in the position. Like, I don't have time for this. And then to that, you know, we have companies that have practiced pay transparency. A lot of the newer startup companies, more of the progressive companies, have started pay transparency. So how do you feel about the pay being in the job description and being upfront about that? And then how do you feel about companies who have enacted these pay transparency policies amongst their employees?
Yeah, I love pay transparency. I think it's very important. I think pay transparency is not only good for the company, because that specific practice is telling you that this company is not trying to be about the games. You either going to take the salary or you're not. This is the range that you have to work within. But I also like it because it's additional information and research. So if a company, I'll tell you one specific very large organization that I, and this is some years back, that I looked at for a specific role, they practice pay transparency, and they had a salary range. I think at the time it was like $90,000 to $130,000. And I was like, this is additional information for me that I can say there are Fortune 500 companies that are paying this range. So I love pay transparency because I think it's good for morale. I think it helps employees align with their managers. I think it helps the finance and the accounting department aligns with the expectations of the department leaders. And I also love it because I'm a researcher at heart. I love information and I love negotiating based on what I know, not what I feel. And what I know based on the information that I've collected from this pay transparency and the reports that have been pulled out, I'm able to say, no, 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 I know you're offering me this, but the market is telling me that I should be getting paid this. So I'm all about pay transparency. I think it's a wonderful thing. And if there are any leaders that are currently listening to this episode, I really hope that you would advocate for it because it's just a wonderful practice overall all throughout the nation.
Yeah, I think, I really like it too. I know there's always been a stigma when it comes to pay and people don't want their salaries disclosed. And I think a lot of that is how we've been conditioned to think of, we've been kind of conditioned with this mindset of scarcity and, oh, you're making more money than me, instead of realizing that, you know, we are all in this together as workers and employees. And, you know, this is a system that's kind of designed to kind of divide and conquer. Having those pay transparencies really help. There is a company the CEO I actually follow on Twitter, and he made it his mission to pay everyone. I think you know what I'm talking about. He pays everyone $70,000.
Yes.
Yeah. Like no matter what, he actually took a huge pay cut. To make that happen. And he tweets about it all the time. Before he did it, you know, when he proposed it, the pushback was this was going to impact sales and we can't pay anybody this and this is going to really mess us up. He implemented it and then he was like, we've had stability, job stability, you know,
they didn't have to let anybody go during COVID, whereas all these other organizations had to cut people loose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, I follow him as well. And I love what he's doing because he is not only holding himself accountable, but he's also holding his counterparts accountable because the truth is that there are so many people that don't negotiate out of fear. And on the opposite end of that table, they love people not negotiating because it lines their pockets and there's a little bit of greed associated. So what I tell people is that when you're negotiating, I know you want to be considerate and think about the other person on the other end of the table, and that's all good and well, but you have to make sure that you're putting yourself first and you're negotiating fairly. If you are negotiating and they've said yes to you, I need you to go ahead and stop talking and receive that yes, because what I've also seen is that through people's nervousness that people will just keep talking and talk themselves down. I literally have a friend who negotiated a remote, this is way before COVID, this is like 3 years back, a remote work a perfect work remote situation, and she just kept talking, and the more she spoke, the more her manager was like, well, you know, I have more questions. The person started asking her questions that she was in her nervousness, she was answering, and she kept talking, and the person took that 4-day remote situation and said, you can work remotely 1 day a month.
Wow.
She went from 4 days a week to 1 day a month, and she had a 1-hour commute. Ooh. So I was like, girl, why didn't you just hush? And so I just think that, you know, we really have to recognize that there are so many facets of negotiating as Black women, as Black people. There are so many facets of negotiating. It is true that there is bias. It is true that there's discrimination. It is true that there are microaggressions that you will have to deal with. Don't let that stop you. Mm-hmm. Organizations will say things such as like, oh, if you negotiate, you're being greedy. I'm not greedy, but I am hungry. And I'm going to keep negotiating.
Yeah.
This is what we need to do in order to build wealth within the Black community. Because again, Black women are paying 62 cents per every dollar that a white man makes. And Ayanna Pressley, Representative Ayanna Pressley just tweeted today that, you know, if you really want to applaud Black women, what you would do is you're going to eliminate student loans because Black women have the most student loan debt. You're going to cancel that. And so when we think about that, Black women hold the most student loan debts, then you know you should be negotiating. If you know you have student loans and you got to pay these loans, if you know you have cousins and nieces and your community, your faith, you pay a tithe and all these different things, Black women, we play so many different roles. So we need to be able to take the cape off for a second, be in a community of people that love us, get the information that we need, strengthen ourselves, and negotiate and flex our courage muscle in the workplace, regardless of what's happening in the world.
Definitely be very unapologetic, because men negotiate all the time. Men apply for jobs that they're not qualified for. That's another thing. You have women who there's a job description and maybe 80% of the job they qualify for, but that 20%, oh, I don't have the skills, I don't apply for that. Meanwhile, me as a recruiter in HR, I'm getting resumes from men who work at Burger King and working in a warehouse and working as a cashier. And this is a VP job. I'm like, the confidence of these men is something else. And women, I mean, you want to be confident, but you also want to be competent too. You know, you got to have both. But women oftentimes will see these job descriptions and say, okay, I don't qualify. I'm like, yes, you do. Trust me, all that's negotiable as well. You're never going to get, most hiring managers know, you're never going to get somebody who's 100% every check off every bulletin. So you can negotiate that too. So like you said, there's so many areas that you can negotiate and play on your strengths when you go into these job negotiations. So don't sell yourself short. Make sure that you're coming prepared. Make sure that you know the market. Make sure that you can speak to it and hold your head up, because Black women, I mean, I talk to Black women all the time. I mean, these bios of these women sending me stuff. I had one woman, she works at Georgetown, and then she has her own consulting business, and then she does weightlifting, and she teaches other people weightlifting at the Special Olympics. I mean, my God, like, we do so much stuff.
So much stuff.
And we are so incredible. And I, like every Black woman, even if you're not doing all that, you know, I don't want to make it seem like every Black woman got to go out there and, you know, be superhero. You know, sometimes you work, and you go home and take care of your kids. That's incredible too. Yes. We are so amazing. Don't sell yourself short.
That's right. And that's what negotiating is. It's you knowing who you are. Mm-hmm. It's you knowing the worth of the work that you do. And I say it like that because I believe that there is no amount of money that they could pay a Black woman's worth, because we are worth diamonds and rubies and gems priceless. Oh my. Priceless. So, you know, a lot of people say negotiate your worth. No, they could never pay me my worth, but they can pay me the worth of the work that I do. So mm-hmm. you need to make sure that you are negotiating and you do it unapologetically.
Exactly. So this has been an amazing episode, Elizabeth. She's out here. She's going to make sure you get $1 million at the table. She was just playing. Don't Elizabeth. She going to secure that bag. No, I'm just joking. But she, you know, she definitely will guide you and help you. So Miss Elizabeth, where can people connect with you?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing me to share your platform with you. Mm-hmm. Again, my name is Elizabeth Guetti. I can be followed at We Resolve to Win all over social media. I have a Facebook group specifically dedicated to Black women that want to learn how to negotiate. I'm currently doing a negotiation challenge. So for anyone that is interested in learning how to negotiate, I'm happy to support you. Join the We Resolve to Win group. And if you have any questions or you want to work with me one-on-one for coaching, Elizabeth Go at WeResolveToWin.com.
Awesome. So please connect with her because this is important. You know, what we saw with Stacey Abrams and Black women who did what they did, we are incredible. And make sure you get that money so that you can continue building wealth and being incredible. So again, thank you, Elizabeth, for being on the show and sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. We sure did. New episodes every Sunday. So connect with us in the Tea Room, a members-only safe space on our website, blackmissintheworkplace.com. or follow us on our social media pages. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our Twitter page is always on and popping. So until next time, peace and love.